The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning to you. How are you doing?
Okay, Tov, pretty good. Thank you. I hope you guys are doing all right. It sounds like the listeners are having a good time getting involved this morning. Here, the latest is that apparently we're back to winter weather again. We've had so much rain already this winter, and of course we need it all. Sunshine at the moment, but predictions for more rain over the weekend and more wintry weather. Officially now, the Kinneret is at the highest level that it's been for the last 12 or 13 years. And so the water continues to run into the lake at about 2 centimeters per day. And there are predictions that the Kinneret could be filled up by the end of April if things continue like this. And so people are quite hopeful that we will finally get to a position where the sluice gates will be opened at the Degania Dam area, and that water will be allowed to flow down towards the Dead Sea through the Jordan River. So that's going to be a big moment if that happens this winter. Apparently 1 meter left to go until we reach the maximum level. Already 2 meters have flown into the Kinneret this winter alone. 1 meter to go. So people are really predicting that it's going to happen, which looked very, very unlikely at the start of the winter season.
Amazing. Really, really, really incredible to be in that situation. And really just brilliant, really brilliant news. Israel is taking stringent measures to prepare for the return of Israelis who have been quarantined on the coronavirus ship in Japan. We're very interested in hearing the preparations that Israel is making, because we're convinced, Zanati and I, that if coronavirus comes here, we're all dead. There's just not even a question that they're not even going to need to solve the unemployment problem here in South Africa. We will be wiped out, because that's the level of confidence we have in our health system. Is that right? Is that right?
Yes, yes.
Basically, we are all completely finished if we get coronavirus. But how is it if it comes to South Africa? But how's Israel managing? What's their preparation?
Well, there's a lot of controversy, a lot of controversy. We've got these 12 passengers, Israeli passengers, who have been on this. Do we call it coronavirus? Do we call it COVID-19? I think the name's mutated.
Yeah, it is now, definitely right? COVID-19.
Okay, so 12 Israeli passengers, three of whom were actually taken off the ship, at least two of whom we understand have been confirmed that they have been infected by the virus. But finally, the Japanese authorities have agreed to release them. They're expected home tomorrow morning. A special flight has been chartered by the insurance companies that have insured these people. They've got together as a group of companies. They've chartered this flight. They've got a special crew on board. Special arrangements have been made at the Japanese airport for them to board at a special terminal. And they have made arrangements also in Israel at the terminal that will receive them to take them immediately into quarantine. And a ward has been prepared, an area has been prepared at Tel HaShomer Hospital, where these people will be taken immediately, and they will be kept there for at least 2 weeks, just to allow the incubation period to pass, to make sure that they're not infected. And of course, they will be in the hospital environment, so that if God forbid any of them are infected with the virus, that the hospital will be available to treat them. Their luggage is also going to be separately treated, virus, a special process to allow it to be isolated. So a lot of preparations have been made, and yet there is huge amounts of controversy surrounding the way that the health ministry has dealt with things. First of all, before we even go into that, I was intrigued to see that the most viewed video in China on the day before yesterday was the video of the gathering at the Kotel to pray for people infected with the virus and for those who
are affected. That's incredible. Wow.
That was the most viewed video in China. Now, I don't know how many videos are being viewed in China right now in general.
given I think it's fairly limited, yes.
So maybe it's not such a huge achievement. But nevertheless, I think it's a fantastic piece of information, useless piece of information for us to discuss. Having said that, the health minister, Yaakov Litzman, has come under a huge amount of criticism for both the measures that he has taken and the measures he has not taken, which is, of course, classic in a Jewish country. You can't do it. You can't do too much and you can't do too little. And there's never enough But what's happening is that the criticism that he's come under is because in the first instance, he's decided that everybody who's traveling back from Thailand should also be subject to the same measures as people traveling back from China, from Hong Kong, from Macau, and from various other countries, who have been listed as special countries. And, the argument is that, of course, Thailand is a very popular destination for Israelis, and so to expect everybody coming back from Thailand to be subject to the same measures is a very substantial decision. And the facts that have been presented about COVID-19 in Thailand is that there are no more than 35 cases of the virus out of a population of something like 70 million people and 35 million tourists. And nearly half of those who were diagnosed as being affected by COVID-19 have already been cured and back to their everyday lives. And that most of the people who were sick were actually elderly Chinese people who had actually come from the infected area in China. So the argument is that in Thailand, things are really under control and not as widespread. You know, the virus hasn't been as widespread as the Israeli measures are suggesting that it has been. And so lots of controversy around the whole Thailand decision. And of course, the fact that it affects airlines. AL, for example, have threatened that they might have to cancel their flights to Thailand as a result of this new pronouncement by the Ministry of Health. Having said that, whereas in other countries, I don't know, like the UK, for example, people coming back from the infected areas are actually picked up at the airport. They are taken by force to isolation units, to quarantine units, and they are forced to do, to be separated so that there is no risk of the infection spreading. In Israel, people are expected to do it of their own volition. They are expected to kind of volunteer to go into isolation. So in the first instance, they'll land at the airport and then what? They'll, get on the train, I presume, to go home, right? With all their luggage and things like that, or get on some public transport, or get in a taxi. And then they're expected to go into isolation. So the actual mechanism of how this isolation is supposed to work seems, on the one hand, to be quite extreme and stringent, and on the other hand, not stringent enough, not well thought through enough. There is the prospect that other people could really be infected along the way, even if people put themselves into isolation. So some confusion. And of course, there's no way of policing this. In other words, if someone decides not to abide by these recommendations, these instructions, there is absolutely no way of policing it. So they're actually relying on other people coming forward to say, hang on a second, this person's come back and they're not following the rules. So it seems a little confusing. To be fair, on the kind of general front of people arriving back from these infected areas in the countries that have been listed as being ones that you have to isolate yourselves, Singapore included in this list as well. But on the other hand, for that group of people coming back from Japan from that ship, apparently two people have already died from the ship. I read this morning. Prime Minister Netanyahu did say it is inevitable that COVID-19 will come to Israel. It looks like he's probably right because the plans are a little bit haphazard, but at least for those people coming back tomorrow morning, plans are clear. Lots of people from around residents, general population who live around that ward that has been isolated at the hospital, very unhappy that they're living so close by to a place that will potentially have COVID-19, and so lots of outcry about that, but they are definitely going to be isolated, we understand, at Tel HaShomer Hospital, the Sheba Hospital at Tel HaShomer, when they arrive back tomorrow morning.
Sure. Very, very frightening indeed. Egypt has decided to lift the financial sanctions that it placed on the Gaza Strip. What actions were taken, and what's the story here?
Yeah, the whole Egyptian involvement with the Gaza Strip is always a source of interest to me, because we wouldn't expect the Egyptian government to be taking stringent measures to punish the Hamas leadership in Gaza. And yet the Egyptians are playing a very fascinating role in all that's been happening surrounding the Gaza Strip. On the one hand, when the Hamas leader, Ismail Haniyeh, decided to go to Iran to attend the funeral of the Revolutionary Guard Corps leader, Qasem Soleimani, the Egyptians were very unhappy about this. They had warned him not to go to Iran to attend his funeral. He did so anyway, and as a result of that, the Egyptian government decided to place sanctions on the Gaza Strip. And the way that they did it was that they increased the taxes on cooking gas that was being supplied to the Gaza Strip from Egypt. They also raised the taxes at the Rafah border, the Rafah crossing, for people coming backwards and forwards to Gaza, effectively making it unaffordable for people to go through that crossing. And they put a huge tax on tires that were being imported to the Gaza Strip from Egypt. So that's the way that Egypt decided to place these sanctions on the Gaza Strip. And as a result of that, the IDF has been involved in actually supplying more cooking gas in order to try to overcome these. So on the one hand, Israel and Egypt are sort of cooperating with each other. And on the other hand, there are some actions that they're taking that are really contradicting the actions of the other party. Egypt and Israel, for example, quite recently had a security meeting. It's understood from that meeting that Israel had actually intended to carry out targeted attacks against the Hamas leader, Ismail Haniyeh, to potentially eliminate him and another very, very senior Hamas leader as a result of this uptick in balloons with RPGs attached to them with all kinds of explosive devices. This was apparently Israel was planning to carry out some targeted attacks. And as a result of the meeting with Egypt, the Egyptians managed to convince the Israelis not to carry out these targeted attacks. So once again, there's been some interesting interactions going on between Egypt and Israel. Be that as it may, the Hamas leadership also decided to respond to the Egyptian sanctions by simply sending all of these explosive devices to Israel. So this seems like it was a reaction to the Egyptian sanctions. And they also turned a blind eye to those renegade groups who decided to fire missiles towards Israel. We've had a few missiles, isolated missiles here and there over the past couple of weeks. Now, apparently, the Egyptians have decided to lower the taxes again in order to reduce the sanctions that they've placed on the Gaza Strip. In return, we understand there's been a little bit more calm along the Gaza border. We haven't seen as many explosive devices and bombs, missiles being launched towards Israel. Israel has also been exercising been pulling the strings that it has against Gaza by, first of all, decreasing the fishing area off the Gaza coast, and then increasing it again in order to relax the sanctions that Israel places. And also, interestingly, Israel has granted 2,000 more work visas for merchants who want to work in Israel coming out of the Gaza Strip. And apparently this is the first time that this increase has been allowed since back in 2007. And apparently these merchant visas are very much sought after by citizens in Gaza who would love to have the opportunity to travel in and out of Israel in order to do some work. So some quite fascinating things going on behind the scenes. Interestingly as well, Israel has allowed the import of cement for the first time into the Gaza Strip since 2014. And of course, the cement is very sensitive because this is what's being used to build tunnels. But apparently, Israel's wall, the smart wall along the border, has really been doing what it needs to do in order to prevent the possibility of tunnels being dug under the border. And hence, Israel's relaxed its sanction on the Gaza Strip and allowing the import of cement. So again, a few very interesting things going on behind the scenes that we don't really read about in the everyday press.
Absolutely right, Anthony Reif. Unfortunately, we are out of time. This is Where We Love and Leave You. Hope you have a great weekend. Stay warm, and I guess that I would say stay dry, but actually we do need a little bit more rain there, don't we?
We will stay dry even though it will be raining. There's a way of doing both together. But of course, we hope that the rain that comes over the weekend, which is expected to be quite heavy, won't bring any further damage or any injury to people. Because of course, unfortunately, the increase in the rainfall has come with a price. And so we hope that people will stay safe over the weekend.
Absolutely. Have a Shabbat Shalom. And we, of course, will catch you on Monday morning.